Welcome, everyone. It's September 29th, 2017 already, and this is the Roundtable Nutrition Counseling conference call. I'm Molly Kellogg. I'm assuming that all of you calling in know who I am, but I will briefly give you some background. I am a registered dietitian. I've been for over 30 years. I'm also a licensed clinical social worker. And in my private practice, somebody else has some coughing going on too, along with me. In my private practice in Philadelphia, I do both nutrition counseling for eating disorders and I'm a psychotherapist. I am also a motivational interviewing trainer, and that's a lot of what the focus will be on today, the topic of motivational interviewing for healthcare settings. I'm presuming a good number of you on the call are dietitians. If when you chime in you don't happen to be and you'd like to mention that, that would be fine. We welcome everyone on this call, though. This is an informal gathering. It's not structured in any way. It's not like a seminar. It's just a time for us to get together and share resources, if any of you have any, or if anybody has any fun successes that happened recently using motivational interviewing skills, for example, or wants to share a concern or a struggle or a question. So that's what this call is all about. So I think that's it in terms of introduction, and I'd like to open it up. We appear to have roughly 25 people on the call, and I'll just open it up to whoever wants to jump in.
Hi, Molly. I'm Evangeline Samples.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us again.
I'm sorry, what?
I thank you for joining us again. Is there something you'd like to share?
I'm a consultant dietitian, and I'm working in both a clinical setting, and I have also taught several college courses, and I'm writing a CE credit course for nurses. And Molly, I'm also having some difficulty hearing you.
Oh gosh, is my voice seem to be sort of low?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I will try to speak up.
Down or something.
It may be the speakers I'm using, but I will try to speak up. It could also be these darn allergies that may be blunting my voice a little bit.
Okay.
I will try to speak up. Did you have a question or concern or something
no,
to share?
I just really wanted to say hi.
Hi. You're in West Virginia, as I remember.
Yeah,
is that right?
I am in West Virginia.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Well, welcome. Who wants to chime in? And if you're trying to chime in and we're not hearing you, you could unmute your phone. If you'd like to mute your phone, you could do 4-star.
Hi, I guess I'll chime in. My name is Kelly.
Okay. Was that Kelly? It's a little unclear.
Hi.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Kelly.
Okay.
I just completed my master's in nutrition, and I'm actually taking my RD exam on Monday, but I have a question.
Good luck.
thank you. I have a question. I've been volunteering at a free clinic and trying to really employ MI with all our diabetic patients. And I just am looking for some suggestions. Right now I have a wonderful patient who's very motivated. He has prediabetes, and the way that he's managed weight is by completely cutting out carbohydrates. And he wanted to talk to me about a safe way to still lose weight and eat carbs. And we've talked through all the logistics, but he's terrified of ever eating carbs. And I've met him 3 weeks in a row now. And every week he's still losing weight. He's doing well, but he tells me, I'm so tired of chicken. I'm so tired of vegetables. I'm still afraid to eat carbohydrates. And I feel like I've hit a dead end. And I'm just not sure how to really be of service and what type of questions to ask him.
Wow, you sound frustrated.
Yeah. I feel very inadequate, and I would like to be of service to him.
Yeah, and I'm also hearing that you're impressed and pleased that he is able to do something so dramatic. And I share your concern that it's probably not sustainable in the long run, and he seems to be saying that
right.
too. He's sort of sick of what he's eating now.
Yes, and he has talked about how it's not sustainable too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he knows that, and he's scared.
Yes, very scared.
And he keeps coming back.
Exactly.
Yeah, so he's there. You and he are together. You're a team, right? Yeah. Let me just toss out a few ideas and then see if other people have other ideas, too. One of the things I think of immediately is behavioral experiments. He's doing one thing, right? And he's noticing certain results. The idea would be to see if you and he can design an experiment for him to do something else, which might be having one carb serving a day or something, or whatever he thinks is manageable, or one carb serving, and then see what happens. Sort of do it as a short-term experiment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at my list of tips. I wrote a tip number three, actually, was on the idea of using experiments. I always think of that when people are scared.
Okay.
Because when they're scared, if they think of it as, well, I'm just going to try it a few times and notice what happens and get back to Kelly and we'll regroup together. You know, it tends to be a little easier. I presume you've done a fair amount of educating him already.
Yeah, he's very well educated. He retains information. He comes every week with very specific questions about things we haven't covered.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about how he used to sit down and eat 15 tortillas at a time. And mm-hmm. I asked him, well, what if you ate one instead of 15? And he mm-hmm. said, I don't think I can eat one. I think I'll get out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, if he says that in your situation, yeah. Kelly, since you're not working with eating disorders, right?
No.
You may sort of have eating disorder. I don't know, but that's not what you're doing with him. And therefore, take him at face value. Say, okay, I buy it.
Okay.
And you can even use the. And my process of affirming, he seems to know himself
mm-hmm.
well. And, well, maybe there'd be other foods.
Okay.
That he would start with. Ask him to choose which carb foods to start with. He may never get back to chips. Because he may be something that don't work very well for him. I don't know. Kelly, he strikes me as a great client to practice using a lot of autonomy language, a lot of choice language. It's up to him.
Mm-hmm.
What are his thoughts about how he would do it? Things like, where would you like to be a month from now? What would you like to be able to eat? And let's figure out together how you're going to get there. Now, I've been blathering on a bit. How are we doing, Kelly?
Oh, this is great.
Okay. Anybody else have any other ideas for Kelly?
I did. I liked, well, first off, I liked the idea. My name's Rebecca.
And your name?
Yeah, my name's Rebecca Hendrick. I'm in private.
Okay.
Practice.
Hi.
But I do like the idea of letting him choose, you know, maybe which carbohydrate feels safest to practice with. The
mm-hmm.
other idea, maybe if there is a more challenging carbohydrate, that he tries to do it in a more controlled environment, you know, perhaps out to a restaurant or, you know, a setting where he's only served so much and it's not at home where he can eat the whole bag of tortillas.
Mm-hmm.
Or just having his support system there when he experiments if he feels like he needs accountability in order to not go overboard. That's my thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great help.
Also,
thank you.
Uh-huh.
That's a great suggestion.
Uh-huh. Any other ideas from people? And, Kelly, what you're describing is not uncommon, where people go overboard because they get scared. And most of us know that that kind of approach is not going to last. It certainly gets them going, but it's not going to last. And that, indeed, is part of our job, to help guide and ease people towards something that is sustainable and really doable for them in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Something that's more honored. Do you feel like you need more thoughts?
This is great. This is a starting point. I appreciate all your suggestions.
Okay. Good. I'm curious whether there's anybody on this call who has had a success story recently. It's fun when people can share that, you know, where they had some MI skill that felt a little scary to them or something like that, and it went really well. If anybody has one of those and they'd like to share it, I'd love to hear it. Or any challenges or questions.
Hey, Molly, this is Heather.
Hi, Heather.
I think I emailed you this week, but I figured this would be a good platform to kind of bring it up. I have a client, a male in his 50s, and his blood work was just off the charts. Triglycerides were 1,600. His A1C was like over 12, with fasting glucose is close to 400. And when he found me, those blood work, that was done in March, but he found me in June, and he had already wanted to try a plant-based diet, and so I supported him with that. And he is a husband and wife team. His wife is definitely part of this process because she's doing all the cooking. And for 3 months, gosh, I don't even know if it's been 3 months. It's probably going on 3 months now. He did it, and he's doing really well, and everything's been fine. And now we're at the point where he wants to add in some exercise. And he suggested 5 days a week, and he wanted to just start walking and running and weight training. It was just so much. And so, you know, I really just didn't want him to get – first of all, we all know that's just not going to be practical and sustainable, at least not zero to all of that. And two, I really didn't want him to hurt himself. He's still carrying extra weight, and he hasn't been working out. So my question is I want to support him with all this enthusiasm and motivation, but how, like, what are the tactics I need to use in order to help build a very realistic plan to work up to whatever it is he wants to do?
Good question. And when you sent me an email about this, I was searching. I really thought I wrote a tip about unrealistic goals or something like that, and I can't seem to find it, so maybe I need to write one on that. Let's find out from other people, though, what their thoughts are, about, because this is obviously familiar to other counselors as well. And we in our head are thinking, right, you're not going to be doing all that. That's just unrealistic, you know. And yet, of course, you don't want to be blunt like that and say that to the client. Let's hear what other people do in those situations.
So, hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Natalie. One possibility that comes to mind is by first affirming his willingness to branch out and try all of those things all at one time. And obviously he's very enthusiastic and passionate about, you know, regaining his health and wellness through activity. And then following up that affirmation then with an open-ended question, kind of diving into what his past experiences have been with some of these things, just to learn more about him in the process, and then to get more information for you as a practitioner to either move forward or to maybe figure out what would be a realistic approach given his history.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
I like this. Yeah, you're affirming and then you're okay. Right from the beginning. without jumping all over him.
Right, because really it's the behavior that we want him to be doing. He is taking the initiative to, you know, go further with all the progress that he's made on his nutrition side of things. So really at that point then it's about, we don't want to just completely, you know, ruin that process that he's engaging in, but what are some ways that we also make sure that he's going to be successful in what he wants to accomplish?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's really helpful. I haven't really asked him about what he's done in the past. I know whatever he's done, it's never stuck. He's been unhealthy for a while, but I haven't really talked to him about his activity that he's done in the past specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll toss out a question that I picked up from another trainer, a very open-ended, what's your experience been with exercise? You know,
right.
Very open-ended. So it gets him to talk about running, swimming, weights, whatever, and or how he's dropped it or, you know, what kind of schedule he's used or things like that. So real open-ended evoking. Yeah, I really like that, Natalie. That's the way to go.
Hi, this is Molly. Hi, Molly. This is Molly.
Hello.
Hi. I mean, you might have already done this, but another suggestion is, like, I try to just have my patients work on, like, two goals at a time and making sure that they're SMART goals. So say, okay, it's great you want to walk every single day, but you know, what can you physically think you can do? And then just say, okay, you're going to do, 5-10 minutes? If you want to do it every day, fine. But let's try, a little bit, you know, more modest. So maybe 3 times a week, walk 10 minutes on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or whatever, and just be as specific as possible. And once he masters that and doesn't have any pain or issues, then just build slowly off of that.
Mm-hmm. And so we know, that's how – real change happens step by step. Heather, what do you think?
Yeah, I like that idea, and I'm curious what do you think about the idea of saying, because I like what you said about mastering that first. So, it's only been a week and a half or 2 weeks, and, you know, I know that he's already missed a few days, and he went to the gym twice on one day, thinking he's going to make up for that. So what do you think about suggesting going twice a week or 3 times a week or whatever for a certain amount of time, and then if he hits all of those goals, then he's allowed to add another day? Does that make sense, or does that make things worse?
I think it makes perfect sense, and I think he just needs to make sure that, he's not having any pain through doing that, and then see what he thinks is appropriate. Do you think it's do you think you can add another day realistically and do it every single week, and then I would go from there?
Yeah. And part of this is how you interact with him about it, and that's the MI part of it. I mean, what exercise he does and how often, that's a whole other story, but how you interact with him, and ideally you want him to be looking realistically about it, at the situation, and realizing that going step by step may make more sense. If he really has never made real lasting changes, informed how to do it. And I must say, I found myself at times going into the classic MI elicit, provide, elicit, even with this issue, the process of making changes effectively. So I'll say something like, yeah, what have you learned from before about making changes successfully? What has worked for you? And he may know that going step by step is helpful. He may actually say that the best way for him is to jump in with both feet. I don't know. You do the evoking stuff first, and then if you really feel like you want to tell him he's unrealistic, do a neutral fact, something like, most of my clients find that when they start with a smaller goal, they're more apt to eventually be successful, right? That would be a fact, if you will. Then he gets to take that or not, or a fact that you might throw out. I mean, depending on what you feel like saying. Sometimes I'll say, you know, I find I've learned things about the people who are most successful and how they do it. Would you like to hear that? I get them to beg me for the information.
Yeah.
And then I'll say, okay, you know, I found that the people who are most successful actually don't do anything near what they want to do right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. They just dip their foot in. You know, they do little bits. They see how they feel physically. They, you know, see what it's like when it's different weather out, whatever. They just experiment with it for a while, and then they add from there if they're ready.
Okay.
And then there's the final elicit, which is, what does that sound like, Mr. Jones? You know.
Mm-hmm. No, this is great. Thank you. This is great. I wrote this all down. Thank you.
Okay. You know, and it's so interesting, this issue of how it is that people actually make lasting changes. And for those of you like me who've been around for a while, and I'm sure a lot of you have, you notice that people do it in very different ways. And we can't necessarily tell people, that's not going to work, you can't do that. We can inform them about what we've run into, and then they get to choose.
Right.
Anything else about this? Because this is an important situation that comes up.
I do have a question, actually, about this that we're talking about. Maybe after you've done provide elicit with someone who has set more of that unrealistic goal, once they've had the option then to choose what it is that they'll do, would you want to follow that up with a confidence ruler?
Certainly would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Assuming there's time in the session, if that client has narrowed it down to what seems like a relatively smart goal, if there's time, it's always a good idea to scale it, even if you've done it before on the bigger goal or something, when you narrow it down. Because, of course, when generally the confidence number you get when it's a gigantic goal may be pretty low, and then when you narrow it down, the confidence tends to go up.
Right.
And you can use that to explore it a little more. You know, actually, this reminds me of a funny way that I've noticed it's handy to use the confidence scaling is when you feel like the person's plan may be a bit much, you know, it may be too much for them. It's up to them, of course, to figure out whether it is. But I'll often very carefully word the confidence scaling. I'll say, so your plan is to go to the gym after work Monday through Friday every day. Tell me on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely is it that you think that that'll happen, you know, every day, Monday through Friday for a month? You know, just give me an idea on a scale of 1 to 10 how likely that is. I'll often use the word likely instead, because it tends to remind them that, you know, there are things that come up, or they have a long day at work, or, you know, things like that. And then it brings out a little bit more, and you can explore more. You can play with that. Any other thoughts for Heather or anyone on this?
Hi, Molly. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Hi, this is Cassandra. I'm down in Texas. I don't know where y'all are, but I actually don't have anything to build on that, but I do have a new question. It's a situation that I've been coming up with more with my clients. I don't have a degree in nutrition. My master's is in health and fitness management. And I work for a lifestyle management coaching company.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I feel like it's generational. I have a big southern contract, so I get a lot of people from the south in Georgia specifically. And I feel like it's men and women, like 50 to 60-year-olds, so just a little bit older. And they're having a little bit of trouble. They have, we go through our good coaching calls, really good coaching calls. They express the desire to want to improve their nutrition. They're doing good with, like, little bits and pieces that they have control over. So we go over, you know, just kind of like healthy meal planning, snacking, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What they're running into, and I'm finding that they run into more, is trying to, not really butt heads with their spouse, but trying to persuade their spouse or their significant other on things like dinner, where both of them are home. Either the husband has absolutely no desire to change their eating habits, the wife's doing all the cooking, and she's going to fix what he wants, obviously, regardless of whether or not it's good for them. Or maybe one spouse wants to go out to eat all the time and there's not a whole lot of good options, especially in small towns, like rural Georgia. Thoughts on maybe how they could start, like, that discussion with their significant other or build that confidence to start that dialogue?
Oh, what a good question. To a certain extent, you're getting in the territory of marriage counseling, and that's what you're trained for. Because indeed, the relationship between the two of them is what she's talking about, basically, and how it is that when one of them wants to change something and the other one doesn't, and, you know, the change can't quite happen just totally independently, what do you do, you know? So this is a very sticky situation. I'd love to hear thoughts from anyone else on the call. And what I'm hearing, Cassandra, is it's not that you're looking for specific tips about snacks or anything. I mean, you know all that already. It's a matter of how to help the person figure out how to approach their spouse or interact with their spouse.
Exactly.
Is that right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Anybody have any ideas?
Hi, this is Molly again. I have an idea.
Hi. Sure.
Hi. I actually heard, like, this on the radio the other day, but the one spouse wants to make the change, the other one doesn't. But they said the real way to kind of make someone want to make the change is to appeal to their emotion as opposed to their, I guess, their intellect, maybe. Like, so the example they had given on the radio was the dad, like, didn't want to put on his seatbelt, but the mom was like, I'm not driving the car until you put on your seatbelt. So what worked was that, like, the mom said, you know, please put on your seatbelt. Like, I don't know what I would do without you if anything was to happen. So it's kind of like showing, like, you care, and this is why you want them to do X, Y, and Z. So just saying, maybe in this case, you know, I just want to be around to be with you forever, and I want to make these changes so I can do that. Maybe that would be more motivating to the other spouse to either get on board or just respect their wishes in general.
Mm-hmm. How does that sound, Cassandra?
I like that. That's a good idea.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So helping, you could help that client figure out a way to word that. Yeah, and if, let's say it's the wife making the changes, if she can manage to convey to the husband. I don't want to die before, I mean, this may be a little blunt, and some couples may actually talk like this, you know, I don't want to die before you because you don't know how to take care of yourself, right? Something like that. You know, we're saying, I want to be around for a long time, and that's why I'm eating this way. It also gets tricky. Sure.
Sorry. So this is Heather again. And I'm just want to make sure I understand the situation. Like, the, let's say, husband needs to change his diet, but the wife is, I mean, is she being obstinate? Like, she doesn't want to cook a certain way? Is that the question?
Some of them will. Like, sometimes the husband has expressed to me a desire to change, but he either does not know how to cook or isn't willing to go into the kitchen and, like, help his wife cook. It presents itself in a number of different ways. The wife is willing to cook a certain way, but her husband won't, like, just refuses to eat that way, so she ends up having to make, like, two different meals, one for herself and one for him. You run into that a lot with kids, too, adults and children, or adults and elderly parents that they're caring for. So it presents itself in a lot of different situations, a lot of different ways, but I feel like if I could centralize one good strategy, it might be
right.
A lot
easier. Right, yeah. Yeah.
So,
well,
okay,
I mean, there are a lot of ways to look at this, and it depends on, you know, that particular family. But I think appealing to emotion indeed makes sense, and appealing to family cohesion or whatever, if there is enough family cohesion. Some people in eating disorders field use the analogy of if your child had cancer, you would do what you had to do to get this child help, right? So if one person in the family, for medical reasons, needs to eat a certain way, is the rest of the family going to support that person just the way they probably support them and drive to them to the hospital if they needed chemo, you know? I don't know if these examples are too sort of blunt, but to see if the family can look at it as a family issue and not just an individual, well, she has to eat that way, but I don't have to. How would you do that, though? Somebody else wanted to chime in a moment ago. Who was that?
Yeah, no, I just to kind of circle back around to what she mentioned the situation was, and I don't know if this is the right way to look about this, but if he's your client, I don't know. I would work with the client, and I feel like if it's, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's his problem. So I understand, like, if the wife's willing to make changes, that's great. We need to incorporate that. But if they're not willing to make changes, then I would still kind of direct towards the client. And I just feel like there's opportunities there to explore, how bad does he actually want this to happen for himself? And he needs to start learning some new skill sets. And I think there's a way in MI to kind of start finding out what changes he can do for himself. Because I think that, you know, there are things people are willing to do, they just don't realize it yet. So one, I would start working with them and start exploring the real opportunities for them to start doing things for themselves. And two, I don't know if this is something that's even an option, but there is a program out there called Culinary RX. And it's an online program, so it's not going to be for everybody, but, you know, if someone is actually interested and willing to learn, this is a program for the layperson to learn a little bit more about nutrition and cooking. And it's a way, and as dietitians, we can be what they call prescribers. So you can actually download the app and then prescribe it, quote unquote, to the client. And I think they get a discount when they do that. And it's nothing like where we make money or anything, but you just prescribe the client, then they get a discount on the program, and you can actually track their progress. So it's not going to be for everybody, but for those that are interested in learning, it's an online program where they can start to pick up some basic culinary skills.
Right. And that's an interesting example of Culinary RX. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And that's an interesting example of where you as a dietitian might provide a resource that would then be given to another family member. In other words, if the wife's doing the cooking, he could pass it on to the wife if he knows that she likes apps, you know, or programs or something. Now, if she doesn't, that's not going to work. And that's an interesting...
I imagine... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting balance between... Yeah, if he's the patient, he's the one who's got to take charge here. And indeed, there are times when but my wife does the cooking and she's not willing to change is essentially him being resistant.
Right.
Because he essentially, he wouldn't want her to change either, right? and it's sometimes hard to distinguish.
I mean, no one wants to change,
what,
you know? So it's very
right.
But I,
right,
the
right.
Issue is I imagine that if he's going to start actually changing his behaviors and start doing, like, even the smallest thing in the kitchen, the wife is going to be like, who are you? Like, who's this guy? And she actually,
right.
I just imagine, you know, like, the wife being like, oh, like, he's serious. And so she might start to change her views as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have something to add. This is Alyssa. I was in a similar situation recently where I was working with a male client, and he has a lot of barriers with his wife in terms of her not really, like, being on board with the changes he needed. And we've talked about that multiple times. She actually, like, won't let him in the kitchen. She won't let him go in there to get mad at. But they were out, and he was actually trying to practice more mindful eating practices, and he was describing to me that she gets upset if he doesn't eat when she eats. And he had already told her that he really didn't want to eat at that time. He wasn't hungry. But he caved because he didn't want to fight with her, which, as a married woman, I respect, you know, that. So I learned a good, like, assertiveness technique from a therapist that I gave to him. And essentially in the communication, it is when you say blank, I feel blank, I wish we could blank. And so the example I gave him was, like, when you say you want me to eat with you, it makes me feel like you don't respect my health goals. I wish we could get on board, or maybe, like, talk about this or respect each other's eating decisions. And I followed up with him recently, and he said he used some of those strategies, and their conversations went a lot better. More so, I think, from his side of things, it was less of a fight and more of, like, a way for him to get the point across.
Right. And that gets to the emotion part of it again, because that middle part of the steps of assertiveness, I actually have a handout on the steps of assertiveness that I think is on my website. I'll have to make sure it's there. And that middle step is the how it makes you feel, how whatever it is makes you feel. And you could be in a position to sort of help the clients figure out what it is they feel that they'd like to say to their spouse. You know, it feels like you don't care if I have a heart attack soon, or you don't care if I have my book, or, you know, if I lose weight, or or you don't respect. It feels to me like you don't respect my wanting to be more mindful. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that kind of helped with him because he was feeling mad, but
yeah,
he was feeling that way because of a different feeling, you know. So
yeah, feeling disrespected and yeah, Good. I was thinking of the steps of assertiveness, but I wasn't gonna. Necessarily bring it up.
It's
good.
A little off, right, a little off of nutrition type, but.
Yeah, but, you know, that's what we get into sometimes. So we're talking about the balance between working with the client to change the things that they can change. And, of course, we can do that. We can just focus on the meals that they do have control over and maybe how much food of the food that someone else makes that they put on their plate. And there may be times when we can prompt the client to see if they can get other family members on the team to look at. There are plenty of spouses who don't even sort of haven't realized that they aren't being a team player. They may even think of themselves as a team player, but they're not being one in this instance. Any other thoughts about this interesting dilemma? I think this reminds me of tip number 50, which is in volume 2, my practice workbook, What We Know to Be True. And that one may be helpful. because there are times when you and the client may both be a bit stymied, and simply doing some summarizing and, reflecting and summarizing the situation as you see it, what is true, something like, boy, you've been working hard at this and you really want to take this seriously and make these changes. And you're discovering that you can't do it alone, that you need more help from your family, and you've tried and you haven't made much progress with that yet. And just sort of summarizing where you're at, the things that are true, sometimes can jiggle something in the client. If you find different ways of saying anyway, and if somebody doesn't have volume 2 and they want me to send them a copy of that particular chapter, send me an email. So we have about 10 or 15 minutes left. What else?
I have a question. This is Molly yet again.
Hi.
Hi. I'm having difficulty, and I know you sent an email about it recently, but it's the patience of, like, just give me a meal plan and I will follow it, which I don't think works, but maybe I just need some tips on how to convince my patients that, you know, me handing you a piece of paper and expecting you to just do this the rest of your life is not realistic, but I don't think they have the confidence in themselves, I guess, to, you know, tweak their current diet to try to make it healthier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I did write a tip on that not terribly long ago. I think I called it Just Tell Me What to Do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll quickly look it up. And then, while I'm doing that, hang on a second.
Molly.
I feel like it was relatively recently. Yes, it was number 175, Just Tell Me What to Do. I even put it in quotes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And always – mm-hmm. You found it, did you? Yeah. One of the things that I always notice when I'm trying to persuade someone something, I think, Molly, that's the way you – how can I persuade this person?
Right.
That won't really work. Yeah. Whenever I find myself in that situation, I tend to think of that as a category that fits in the writing reflex, the sort of just wanting to go in and fix them.
Mm-hmm.
And I always ask myself to step back a step. And this wouldn't be a bad idea for an illicit provider, illicit for that matter. I guess I do have some handouts. I'd like to find out from you first what your experience is in making changes like this, right? So you find out that first.
Okay.
Because many of these people have been handed things before, mm-hmm. been told things before. So see if you can evoke what's happened in these situations before. And then at that point, if they come up with on their own the fact that that doesn't work very well, you don't even have to do anything else.
True.
But if, you know, if they don't come up with much, they need to do one of those, like what we were saying before about sharing with them what you have discovered to be true in your experience with your clients.
Molly?
That.
Yeah.
I would approach.
Yes.
Is mm-hmm. I would say, well, there really no one diet is right for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's like going to a tailor and having a suit made, and this meal plan is just for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
Taking someone's measurements, when you take into account maybe their lifestyle habits, their food preferences, their allergies, their religion.
Mm-hmm. And even when you do that and do your darndest to come up with menus and a food plan, they're still going to end up saying, Well, wait a minute. You put asparagus on there. I don't like asparagus. You know? And they hadn't mentioned they didn't like asparagus because you didn't get to it. And you can spend hours and hours, you know, fighting and arguing with them about that. And we all know that it doesn't work very well. Often I'll also toss in
this is the list of non-starchy vegetables. Pick one that you want.
Right. Right. Which, essentially, you're right. That puts it back on them, right? You are providing the information, and then you're asking them to actually do a little bit of work and go from there. Absolutely. And I'll often say to people, you know yourself. You know your preferences. You know what stores you like and how much time you have to cook and all that. And I can give you the information about which foods, et cetera. And if you'd like to for us to walk through together how that might work for you, that's great. We could do that. I've learned that just giving people a food plan. How are we doing on that, Molly?
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
Hi, this is Pam. I want to make a comment on the meal plan thing, if I could.
Sure.
So I was in a similar situation not too long ago when someone wanted that, and I actually was hesitant to give that to them without really personalizing it for them, but one of the things I learned from that experience was, and I haven't tried it yet, but I'm going to try it, is to, again, you know, ask them what their experience has been with having meal plans before, and, you know, most likely they may have had an experience before, but what I'm going to try is to say, you know, what do you think about this idea? Why don't, you know, since you do know yourself best, what you like, what you don't like, what, you know, your cooking skills, you know, how about you kind of start by working on a plan yourself? You know, maybe we start with, you know, 7 days, and then I'm more than happy to give you feedback on that. Because then I feel like they will have invested themselves into something that they're more likely to put into action than if I just, again, give them a meal plan and expect that we all know that probably that's not going to fit their needs anyway, and
right.
put all that work and time into it. So what do you think about that approach?
I think that's perfect. That's a great idea.
Yeah, because it's starting basically with what they're doing now or what they think they ought to be doing. I call it the tweaking approach. You know, if they, and for that matter, if they bring in what they're actually eating, then you can hopefully do a bunch of affirming, you know, when you see things that look like they're working really well, and then ask permission to toss in some ideas, and then it becomes more of a process.
Yeah, and, you know, and I had a similar, I mean, this was a positive MI experience with another client who I've been working with for a really long time, and she's working on weight management, and she came to my office again and said, you know, I just don't know why I can't be, you know, sustaining this after all of these years. And so we just, you know, through open-ended questions and my conversation with her, she elicited herself about what it is that works for her. She's like, you know, I do best when I have a plan. And she started spewing out exactly like what she needed to do. And then I just affirmed, like, Linda, you just said it, you know. This is exactly what you need. How about... do that, and then I'm happy again to give you feedback on it. So it just made me feel good that, oh, wait a minute, you know, she just came up with exactly what she needed to do as her next step.
Right.
And I said, and how about this? Why don't you email me your plan so I'll hold you accountable to what you just said you're going to do? And sure enough,
right.
did, so.
Yeah. And that's a really good, that's a fun example. It's great when that kind of thing happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I've learned to particularly, well, a lot of my clients have, oh, well, all my nutrition clients have eating disorders, and I'll often be asking them describe to me how you think about food and plan, like, get up in the morning, or when you're going to be going to the store, where does your mind go? It's fascinating. I mean, some people are really organized, you know, and they write lists, and during the week they write down things they've run out of, and they, you know, and they plan the whole week out. And some people are incredibly organized. And just listening to what goes on in their head, often there's some decent stuff in there, and you can sort of build on it. Then sometimes there's stuff that isn't working as well. One of the things, of course, in eating disorders is all the very, very negative talk, the guilt, things like that. Then we have to work on addressing that because it's not helping. But, anyway, I went off on the tangent. How are we doing, Pam?
We're doing good.
Okay. Tossed in another idea. Any other ideas? Question or concern or resource or something. Nope. Okie dokie. Let me share with you guys some upcoming things. I will be doing my workshop in Philadelphia, which is great for me. I live in Philadelphia, the beginning of December, and in Dallas, and in February, I will be in Phoenix. Those are the only ones I've scheduled for next year. I'd love to schedule a few more into the spring, but I haven't gotten around to it yet. Anybody have any location they can arrange for me to use a room? Oh, in the Chicago area, perhaps, or L.A. I do come back to L.A. again soon. Perhaps, let's see, Atlanta, I was there fairly recently. But if anybody has an idea, so what this would do is say, give someone a free registration in exchange for use of a meeting room that holds up to 24 people. Or I partner with an internship, I had an internship program where I give us a 3-hour presentation to their interns, and then they give me a room for 2 days. So anyway, if anybody has any ideas, that would be great. Some of you may notice I have also been providing introductions to internal family systems, which is, excuse me, a newer form of psychotherapy that works particularly well with people with eating disorders and people with trauma. And there's some of the dietitians who have actually been getting trained in IFS, even those who aren't therapists, and have been finding it very useful. And so I've been doing some introductions around the country with some of my IFS colleagues, and you can read more about that on my website. So am I forgetting anything? I guess that's it. I always welcome emails from people who have a question and wonder if I've written a tip on it, because often I can find the tip and send it to you, or you can give me an idea for a tip. Okay, well, have a good weekend, everyone, and I'll schedule another call in a few months. Take care.